I've always been the type to go all in. When I get into something, whether it's fitness, food, or just following every twist and turn of the season, I want to explore every angle. That's why Prime is such a game changer. It's not just fast delivery, though getting a new cookbook or resistance bands the next day definitely helps. It's also the deep dives on Prime Video, the playlists that match my mood on Amazon Music, and the way all of it comes together to keep me going. What I've learnt is this: Prime isn't just a service, it's a hub, a place where my interests, old and new, can live and grow. From race day rituals to everyday obsessions, Prime helps me get more out of whatever I'm into, and even shows me what's next. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into. amazon.com/prime.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
A stunning move for the lead, composure under pressure, a brilliant second win of the season. In Azerbaijan, Oscar Piastri had everything under control.
After the strange drama of Budapest and the near miss in Monza, this will be so sweet for Oscar Piastri. This time, he can drink it all in. Oscar Piastri wins the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. And it will be a sequel to celebrate. The Australian is a Grand Prix winner for the second time.
Well done, everybody. That was probably the most stressful afternoon of my life. So what a day that was.
And behind the McLaren man, chaos.
We're heading into the wall at high speed. Out goes Perez. Out goes Carlos Sainz. Extraordinary.
At the front, Piastri was perfect. Leclerc lost out, Lando gained some useful points on Max Verstappen, and rookies Franco Colapinto and Ollie Bearman scored points. And we have new leaders in the Constructors' Championship. There is so much to talk about. Welcome to the Baku paddock for F1 Nation's review of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. I'm Tom Clarkson, and with me is Sky Sports F1 presenter Natalie Pinkham. Pinkle,
hello,
are you all right?
I'm great. It's lovely to see you again, particularly after what was such an intense, dramatic 50-odd laps round
the perfect
Baku.
Way to describe it. Intense. From the start, but yeah. Particularly from lap 20 when Oscar made the move.
Great move, lap 20. I think it caught Charles by surprise. And then what ensued was balletic at times, beautiful to watch, incredible defence. Oscar called it the most stressful day of his life, but it didn't show. He seemed to have everything under control. I felt for Charles, this is the fourth time he's start from pole position and hasn't converted it into a win. He's never won around the streets of Baku before, and I really thought today was going to be his day. But, you know, when you consider that Lando qualified all the way down, well, qualified in 17th, but promoted to 15th. This was Oscar's day to shine, and he seized that opportunity with both hands.
I mean, it was metronomic. I didn't see him make a mistake. Certainly not an obvious one, you know, and he had to He had to second guess what Charles Leclerc was going to do behind him. But why don't we hear now, Nats, from the duo that battled so fiercely for victory here in Baku. Charles Leclerc in a moment, but first, the winner, Oscar Piastri.
For me, I think that ranks as probably my best win of my career, I would say. I think trying to soak up that pressure for so long in that race, that was incredibly tough. You know, in the first stint, when Charles was just pulling away pretty comfortably, I thought, you know, we were going to be second at best. Even, you know, Checo was keeping me very honest, and I could see Carlos was very quick at the end of the medium stint. I saw an opportunity or half an opportunity after the pit stop and knew I had to try and take it. And I knew that getting to the lead was going to be one thing, but I knew I had my work cut out for me after that to try and stay there because, I didn't feel like we were the quickest in that first stint. So it was very hard work. Having clean air did help quite a bit, but I think for me it has to be one of the best races I've done.
You say clean air did help, but how crucial was it that you took the lead early on in that stint?
It's what won me the race. I felt a bit sorry for my race engineer because I basically tried to do that in the first stint and completely cooked my tyres. So my engineer came on the radio and said, you know, let's not do that again, basically. And I completely ignored him the next lap and sent it down the inside. So I think at that point, you know, I felt like trying to stay back and wait for Charles to deg was never going to happen. I thought we was just going to secure us P2. So, it was the only thing I had. You know, if I didn't take that opportunity then, I was never going to have another one, I think. So, I mean, credit to Charles. He was incredibly fair. I think maybe he thought I was going to sail on into the runoff, but I was pleasantly surprised that I actually made the corner. So, yeah, it was, you know, a high risk, high commitment move, but that's what I needed to do to try and win the race because I wasn't really going to be that keen to finish second. So I had to try.
So, Charles, if we come to you, very well done. You drove beautifully. You spent a lot of time looking at the gearbox of Oscar Piastri's McLaren. What were the differences between your cars today?
Thanks for reminding me. It's been a pretty frustrating race. I mean, we ran two different configurations. Obviously, they had, a lower downforce package. We had a bit more downforce, which made us quite quick in the castle section. However, in all the straights, they were flying, and that's probably where I lost the race. I misjudged that, and when Oscar overtook me into turn one, I was not too worried. I just wanted to stay within the DRS, keep my tires, and attempt an overtake later on. However, this opportunity never really arise again, just because we were too slow in the straights. So that was a small misjudgment, which had a big consequence. So sometimes it hurts, and it does today, but it's the way it is.
31 laps on the hard tyre was a lot, especially in dirty air the whole time, or pretty much the whole time. At what point did you start to struggle?
Straight away. As soon as I got out the box on the hard, we just didn't manage to find the grip that McLaren had on those tires. And then again, when Oscar overtook me, I was quite calm in the car and I just was focusing on my tire management, which I did. And after 10, 15 laps, I thought that everything was coming together and that maybe towards the end, we will be in a better place. But with the dirty air, I think for 20, 25 laps towards the end, my tires were completely gone. And again, they were just too quick in the straights for me to attempt anything.
Look, back to Oscar. I felt the tone of his voice there. This one meant more than that first win in Hungary somehow.
Oh, 100%. That was tainted by the whole debate around team orders. This was hard fought and well deserved. And I think as a result, it meant so much more. Listen, it is obviously important to get that maiden win under your belt. And there's no doubt that it meant a lot to him. But it felt undermined because afterwards we weren't talking about him getting his maiden win. We were talking about what happened with Lando. That was a bit of a shame, wasn't it?
Yeah, and this one was just all about what a brilliant race he drove from the outset.
Absolutely. But we should also take a moment to say great teamwork from Lando Norris holding up Perez in the castle section. Definitely impacted his teammates' race, Oscar Piastri's race, in a very positive way. So it was good to see that worked well for them. And great to see that recovery drive from 15th up to 4th. Taking McLaren to a 20-point lead in the Constructors. The first time they've led the Constructors since 2014. Yeah. The first time that Red Bull haven't led the Constructors in 55 races. I mean, this is a huge day in terms of the pecking order in Formula One.
Yeah, and McLaren proved with Lando's progress up to fourth that, you know, they have a car that is competitive everywhere, and they're 20 points ahead now, and I think that gap is only going to grow over the next seven races. But what were you thinking before the start, Pinks, as you were stood there at the front of the grid, you know, presenting the Sky coverage? Did you think Oscar was there for the win, or did you think this was going to be Charles' day?
I really thought it was going to be Charles' day, and Charles had a great getaway and actually was building up a decent lead right until lap 20. That was the key turning point. Obviously, that overtake for the lead of the race was a key moment. And then I think the way Oscar handled it from there on in was what was so hugely impressive.
And do you know, because it is so close at the front now, every lap of a Grand Prix weekend is crucial. And Charles Leclerc crashed on Friday. He then in FP1. He then had an issue with the car at the start of FP2.
Yeah, so he said his steering rack was bent. Exactly. Actually, probably nothing to do, weirdly, with the crash. I just assumed that it was a consequence of the crash. But yes, he was on the back foot.
On the back foot, didn't do any long runs, went the wrong way on setup, set the setup more for qualifying than for the race. And that hurt him in the Grand Prix. So you trace it back 2 days.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because we've talked so much coming into this race about how the 50-50 decisions are now going to go Lando's way. And it's all about Lando versus Charles. Meanwhile, Oscar was quietly getting on with it, having a very strong building up through the weekend. Because remember that this is a circuit all about confidence and building that from first practice all the way through to the checkered flag. And that's what I think Oscar did so well this weekend. But it was fascinating, wasn't it? Because the team orders debate never came into play. I mean, we assumed it would. But ultimately, teamwork did. And that's what I really enjoyed about today.
And I kind of felt on Thursday, when there was all the debate about team orders, that are we starting to sense a little bit of friction? Intra-team friction.
Such a
I don't know.
Stirrer.
I'm not. I just felt that. But actually, nice, Pinks, was that
they
Lando,
helped each other. Yes,
Lando was so willing to help.
Absolutely, and
that's
reassuring to Lando. Yeah, I chatted to him after the race, and he said, "Today is a great day for McLaren, and it was all about the team for him." Sometimes I worry Lando doesn't have a big enough ruthless streak. But, you know, he's a great team player. And look, he has still reduced Max's advantage in the drivers. It's now down to 59 points. We've still got seven races to go, seven Grand Prix and three sprint. So there's a lot of points still up for grabs. This drivers and constructors' championships, they're both wide open.
And Oscar is now only 32 points behind Lando.
So,
so this
and
whole championship is ridiculous.
And you've got to factor in all this as well. I mean, it's all happening. And Charles, don't go anywhere, folk. 2024 is edgier seat stuff.
Yeah, and Ferrari will be strong in Singapore next weekend, a race that Charles finished fourth at last year. And
Carlos
Sainz won brilliantly. But hang on, Pinks. Someone is just coming towards us who I've never met before, but it's Nicole Piastri.
Who, by the way, I was sitting behind in McLaren Hospitality for a big chunk of the race thinking, who's that glamorous lady? And then I realised you're Oscar's mum. And then I got really excited for you.
You were that very calm lady watching.
Yeah, you were. I was actually very surprised how calm you were. Did you feel it on the inside?
Oh, absolutely.
Did you?
Oh, yes.
Oh, so he gets it from you then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I definitely feel it on the inside, but I'm...
Oh, no, but you've seemed very calm, and that's certainly what he always seems to do, projects a sense of confidence and calmness.
Yes. I'm not sure he got that from me, but I'll claim it.
You'll claim it.
Talk us through the emotions, because you weren't in Hungary for victory number one, so this is the first time you've seen him in the flesh win a Grand Prix.
Yes.
How was it?
I just trust. He's always very controlled, and he rarely makes a mistake. So I just had to trust that he could do that for 50 laps.
It was a lot. I mean, he came under a huge amount of sustained pressure from a very experienced driver in Charles Leclerc.
Yeah.
And somehow, he didn't look in doubt.
I think that's his strength, though. I think that's when he works best. It's rare for him to make a mistake. So I just had to trust, please not today. Don't make a mistake today.
It's so nice because actually there wasn't anyone in Hungary from the team, was there?
No, as in
the family.
No, none of us wasn't there.
So he must be really enjoying the moment with you now.
Yeah, it's really nice.
He said, didn't he, in the press conference that this is the best win of my career. And I think having Mama and Mark and the gang around must have made it even more special.
He actually said, Mum, this would be a good race for you to come to.
So he knew it was on the cards.
I didn't. My girlfriend texted me this morning and said, I really hope he gets on the podium. And I said, you know, it's actually better for me to be there for the ones where he doesn't do so good. That's proper mama instincts, right there.
Yeah,
it is. Because when he wins, everyone's here for him. He doesn't necessarily need Mum. But when it doesn't go so well, that's probably when he wants, you know, someone in his corner just waiting for him.
So, are you going to come to every race now? Are you coming to Singapore?
No, I'm not. No, I went to Singapore last year and I loved it. But no. Oscar has three younger sisters and I have a life. And he doesn't need Mummy following him around on all the circuits.
Talking of following, though, anyone who does need to follow you on social on media.
You know how I set it up just to get him to answer my... I didn't
stop
set it.
It.
Yeah, he wouldn't answer my calls. So I started up a Twitter account.
Oh, that is brilliant.
I know. Like, answer me, please.
Otherwise, I'll take the piss out of you on social
media.
Yeah, and I did. Bad luck.
Yeah. So I don't even really...
I love it.
My plan was to not open a Twitter account to dominate, the media.
Absolute gold.
Yeah.
Nicole, it's brilliant to meet you.
Yeah.
And you must be very proud of your boy.
I am proud. Yeah. I'm very proud. He's a really good person. And that's what I'm most proud of.
No. Oh,
yeah.
Excellent stuff. Safe flight home.
Thank you.
Great to see you. Thanks,
Nicole. Brilliant.
Do you know what? She's just as lovely as I hope she'd be. Because she's really made me giggle over the last year and a half on social media. So I love the fact she's as cool as she seems.
And it's just, I can't get him to answer my text, so I'm going to set up this Twitter.
That's so good.
But I think people forget that getting a driver, getting your son or daughter to the higher echelons of motorsport is a team effort. It's a family effort because it's so ridiculously...
Huge amount of sacrifice. You've got to remember, they're the other side of the world. Yeah. He had to give up a lot to come over to Europe. And, you know, for her, it's her little boy. She's had to let him fly the nest and pursue his dream. And I think
at the age of 14.
I know, unbelievable, isn't it? And it must just be incredibly rewarding that it is all paying off and it was worth that level of sacrifice.
He had a good run of form in the European races and he's still getting better, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who's only in his second year.
Race number 39.
In Formula One. Yeah. It's so interesting because the first year we saw moments of brilliance from him. He also was very self-critical. He said, look, I need to work on my tyre management. I need to work on my racecraft generally. And he needed to learn about each racetrack. He's now coming into each racetrack for the second time round, full of all those learnings, mentored brilliantly, we have to say, by Mark Webber. I mean, I can't think of a better person to take you under their wing. And yeah, Mark just gets it. Mark handles pressure really well. We chatted to him on Sky afterwards and he was so... We got Webber on Sky. I've been pushing for that for 13 years. He was brilliant though. I love him to bits. He and Anne are just great for Oscar. And you're seeing this career really blossom now. And, you know, thanks to his mum, to his managers, you know, to the team around him, Zach, Andrea, they've all got to take a lot of credit for this. And Lando. Let's not forget Lando in all of this.
I've always been the type to go all in. When I get into something, whether it's fitness, food, or just following every twist and turn of the season, I want to explore every angle. That's why Prime is such a game changer. It's not just fast delivery, though getting a new cookbook or resistance bands the next day definitely helps. It's also the deep dives on Prime Video, the playlists that match my mood on Amazon Music, and the way all of it comes together to keep me going. What I've learnt is this: Prime isn't just a service, it's a hub, a place where my interests, old and new, can live and grow. From race day rituals to everyday obsessions, Prime helps me get more out of whatever I'm into, and even shows me what's next. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into. amazon.com/prime.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Yeah, boy. Lovely, lovely job, Oscar. Great afternoon. Fantastic.
Let's talk now to Piastri's race engineer, Tom Stallard. Tom, what a day. I mean, he's won a Grand Prix before. We saw that in Hungary, but this one was next level.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty special race. The overtake he put in against Charles was, you know, that, he came from downtown with that one. You know, from there on, we hoped that the clear air would, you know, make things simpler, but it didn't. And, you know, I'm sure everyone watching saw, but the next 30-odd laps were pretty stressful for everybody.
Look, he said after the race that he'd actually disobeyed your instructions because he said he went too hard too early in the first stint. So you'd said, right, on the hard tyre, let's be a little bit easier. And he said, no, I absolutely went for it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We attacked Charles in the first stint and we didn't get past, and in doing so we damaged the tyres quite a lot, and then we weren't able to keep up with it anymore, and Charles was able to build a big gap. Then we had a good pit stop. The pit stop itself was good. We were quick through the pit lane. Lando did a wonderful job for Oscar helping out with Checo, and suddenly we were back on the gearbox of Leclerc. And I wanted to remind him what had happened in the first stint, because there's still a lot of laps at that point. Not an easy one stop here by any means. So I sort of said, you know, remember in the first stint we damaged the tyres a lot attacking, and this time let's be tactical. But he knows me well enough also to know that that's the scientist in me is saying that, but the racer that's not saying anything is going, let's go and get him. And the racer in Oscar fortunately went and got him, because I'm not... You know, we saw that the Ferrari and the Red Bull couldn't get past Oscar, and I'm not sure that those fortunes would have been reversed if the cars had been in a different order.
What was it like for you on the pit wall for those last 30 laps?
It's certainly stressful, because when it's that tight, you know that the driver's never really relaxed, so you lose a lot of the opportunities to chat to him. So all of the kind of background decision-making we're doing that normally we would involve the driver in, we try not to burden him with too much information, because it's... I mean, I'm sure everyone watching would have appreciated he had quite a lot on. So, you know, largely leaving him to it, just giving him the gaps, making sure we're managing the battery okay, the odd update on how his tyres are doing, how Charles' tyres are doing, you know, trying to provide helpful information at times that it's not too distracting. So it's tricky, because for a lot of that, you're thinking really hard, but you're also kind of an observer.
Now, this was race number 39 that you've done with him. You've done every race in Formula One with him. Was this far and away the best he's driven?
I think so. I mean, the thing you have to understand is that it also, as he's been here, the car underneath him has been getting better and better as well. So there have been other great drives that he's put together that haven't, you know, produced the headline result that this one clearly has. I think the thing that was so good to see, really, was the keeping a cool head, and we know he's got a cool head, but keeping the cool head when under so much pressure from the car behind. And also, you know, it's a different level of pressure when it's for the win compared to when that's for fifth place or whatever. So the thing that's really cool about Oscar, like, he's really calm, and he genuinely is still really calm in that situation. It makes him very easy to work with because his calmness creates calmness in the people around him, and that makes it easy to make, you know, better decisions and think things through carefully.
So a brilliant win today. Are there still areas where he can get better still?
Certainly. I mean, we weren't on pole and we didn't get fastest lap. No, there absolutely are. We've been working really hard with Oscar this year on race time management, and we've made massive strides with that. Last year, there were various races where really the tyres got out from underneath him and we landed up not really representing his ability because we couldn't manage the tyres effectively. This year, you know, we've had one or two of those earlier in the year. Maybe China and Japan weren't his greatest. And since then, really, you know, he's now in a good place with the time management. It's no longer kind of a weakness, let's say. I still think there's plenty to learn. He's improving all the time with his understanding of the tyres, you know, knowing when to push, where to use the tyre you've got, where to save it and try and keep it cool. And one of the tricky things that people maybe don't realise is that F1 tyre is a Pirelli tyre, the F2 tyre is a Pirelli tyre, but they behave very differently. So it's not like you come out of F2 as an F2 champion and you already understand the F1 tyre. They're quite different.
Now, you've had a wonderful career. You've worked with world champions in the past. Are you seeing what you need to see in Oscar to believe that he can be a world champion as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his rate of improvement hasn't really dulled in 39 races. He keeps learning, he keeps improving, he keeps wanting information, going through stuff. We discuss things, he goes and executes it. So for me, if you're improving at that rate, you know, what's the limit?
Sky's the limit.
And and realistically, the limit comes when that improvement flattens off. And at the moment, we've seen no sign of that flattening off. So that's absolutely going the right way. The other thing I think Oscar is getting better and better at, he was good at the start, to be fair, but he's getting better and better about it, is one of the things that world champion drivers do is to galvanise the team and the factory into having great belief, not just in that driver, but also in themselves. And I think Oscar's leadership in that regard... you know, a good driver, it's a strange environment because you're 22 years old and suddenly you're a leader in a company of, you know, 1,000 people, essentially, which doesn't happen to very many 22-year-olds. And the team looks at you for guidance and support and leadership, and his ability to do that is also really coming on and developing.
Wow. Scary to think how much he can achieve, isn't it? Look, final one. Can we just throw it forward to next week? Singapore. The car looks, well, brilliant here. How confident are you of a win in Singapore?
I mean, the nice thing is the car's been good everywhere. So we don't really seem to have, like, bogey tracks anymore last year. And in recent years, we've had kind of characteristics in the car that have suited certain circuits and been more problematic at other circuits. This car now... it's a pretty universal car, and that's one of the reasons why our position in the Constructors' Championships come about, that we often land up racing different cars at different events, but we're always one of the cars in that race. So going to Singapore, we've no reason to believe that we won't be able to keep being in that position. But that said, you know, here, there's absolutely 8 cars and drivers that could have won the race here, and the racing at the top is so tight that you never go with extreme confidence that you're going to win, because you've just got to have massive respect for everyone we're racing against as well.
Tom, many thanks.
Cheers, Tom.
Now, Pinks, I know you've got to go and catch a flight, so happy flighting. And as you leave, Juan Fossaroli from ESPN joins. This is perfect teamwork. And Juan, the job that Oscar Piastri did, very quickly, summary from you.
Well, incredible, amazing. With that move, what a move. And that gave him the win. It was a perfect move, very tight, very narrow in that first corner, no, almost touching the wall. But that, if he didn't do that, he will be maybe behind Charles quite a lot. And then Charles, trying to overtake him, did a not a good job with the tyres, and at the end was a fantastic win. I think we asked him in the pen, no? He was happy because, you know, the radio was a little bit... But he's like that, very calm, very, very mature for his age. And he say, I'm super happy, but, well, it's the way I celebrate. Oh, second win and then a proper win. I don't want to say that Hungary was not the, a proper win, but with all the conflict with Norris and all the radios and everything, was a little bit frustrating for maybe for him to celebrate. But here was driver of the day also. I mean, what else?
Yeah, and this was peak Formula One for me. I thought the top two in particular, but actually Checo as well, drove beautifully. And the reason it was a chess match, the reason we didn't see lots of overtaking is because no one made any mistakes. They were all on their A game.
And also because Charles mentioned that they were having a little bit more of downforce, and when the only opportunity you have here to overtake is really that long straight, and he will never had the chance to put the car a little bit in front. And also Oscar was doing, he have a manual of how to avoid being overtaken, and he did everything perfect. But I mean, how many laps we didn't knew who was gonna win the race? No, because you mentioned Checo was going a little bit behind, conservative tires, then going attacking again and everything. And the meantime, all that, Carlos Sainz came up from nowhere. I mean, at the end we have four cars that maybe they were one of them in the podium for sure, maybe not compromising the Oscar's win, but I mean, what a race. I think one of the best races of the year, because we have fights in every place.
Yeah.
Norris overtaking Verstappen with doing the fastest lap. I mean, fantastic. Thank you, Baku.
Thank you, Baku. But let's talk about that dramatic ending to the race now. Sergio Perez, Carlos Sainz were racing for a place on the podium until the penultimate lap.
We're heading into the wall! Sainz and Perez make a collision at high speed. Out goes Perez. Out goes Carlos Sainz. Extraordinary.
What the f*** is he that did, man? What the f***? Is he crazy or what? Idiot.
What happened there? What happened? I don't get it.
Basically, I felt that exiting turn two, there was plenty of room between both cars. And within a meter or two, we end up making contact. It's very unfortunate, you know, it all happened too quickly. I think Carlos was trying to follow the toe from Charles as he went to the inside. And that really made things really hard.
Yeah, I managed to pass Checo into turn one. And then I was attacking Charles into turn two. When I exit turn two, Checo was on my left. We normally do a slight drift towards the left into that long straight, which I did like every other lap. And for some reason that I don't understand, Checo and I collided. I'm not someone that wants to put blame on either excuse or blame on another driver. Is racing, everything happens super fast. My feeling today is that I honestly did nothing wrong. I didn't do any erratic maneuver. I didn't put him against the wall or anything like that. We were just, like every other lap, drifting a bit, tiny little bit towards the left, because that's where the racing line is, and we just touched, and it's what it is.
Carlos said he did nothing wrong. I mean, if you see the onboard camera, at least what I saw, he was not even steering, you know, a little bit to the inside, because he said that Charles also did the same. Everybody does the same in that DRS zone. And he was in front. I mean, and he was surprised about the hit. And if he said that, it's like saying, I did nothing wrong. I did what everybody does in that straight every single lap. But he knew that Checo was behind, you know? And he had mirrors. And maybe, I think it was avoidable by both drivers. But the one who is behind can avoid an incident. Because if the driver does it like a maneuver to protect him, and you can see it in the steering wheel, you know, like closing the door. I think it was unfortunate because it was so little, the hit, but makes the car go against the wall and that's over. But, and I want to mention what Checo said also, because he said, if I have to think somebody have to have a crash, I will not pick Carlos. We are good friends. One of the things that hurt me a lot is that the incident was with Carlos, and also for podium position. And also Carlos said more or less the same. Now, like, they are friends, and they came to the pen talking to each other. It looks like I mean, they were trying to find a reason why it happened, and nobody blamed each other. They just say that they did everything right.
Look, for Checo, obviously it's a DNF on the result sheet, but there are still lots of positives to take from this, isn't it? I mean, the first time he's outqualified Max Verstappen since Miami 2023.
Yeah.
And actually outraced him as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Max told us yesterday, for him, not had confidence in the car. When you have not confidence at all in a racer like this, you have to maybe brake a little bit earlier, you know, not taking so much risk. But Checo found this with a little, Checo said a little difference between set up one car to another. Find the car perfect for him in a racetrack that is suits him very well. Five podiums, you know.
Yeah, but why does this suit him so well? I mean, I remember Andrew Green, who was technical director of Force India at the time, telling me that he loves 90 degree corners and that he has traction control in his right foot. He's brilliant at putting, you know, the tire whisper and all that kind of thing. But that doesn't completely explain why he goes so well here. Is he last of the late breakers and hugely brave? Is that what it is? Because Carlos said to me the difference between him and Charles in qualifying here was all in the braking.
Yeah.
And is Checo the, you know, the man on the brakes?
And talking about Carlos, I asked him about why he's not been so good in this track at all. He said, I've been coming here for 10 years and I don't like this track. And I cannot explain you why. It's something in the nature. He said that word, like, it's not my, suits my driver's style. I didn't feel very good. And at the end, well, he was doing a great job. And I think the same applies for Max and for Checo. Checo, he finds himself very, very, I don't know, with confidence, maybe because of the results he have in the past, and he know where to push a little bit more than the rest. And also because the tweaks they did in the setup, now the car is going a little bit towards Checo. But it's a strange with Max. You know, Max can drive whatever setup you have. He always tried to get, even in the race, he tries to be faster and faster, and Lando overtook him like a rocket. And I don't understand, but Checo loved the racetrack. And that's why the frustration, I think, it was bigger, because he was able to get a perfect result for the team. I don't know the win. He mentioned the win, but maybe a second
Checo
place.
Yeah,
but a second place was possible, no? Because Charles was suffering. I mean, but a second place, and from second go to a DNF was a disaster.
I mean, I thought he was playing a very clever game in the middle of the race.
Yeah, yeah.
While Oscar and, you know, Charles were nose to tail, and Charles was ruining his tyres, as it turned out. I thought he was hanging back a bit, keeping everything cool, looking after the tyres, and then was going to come on strong at the end. But
yeah, what Charlotte mentioned is that the outlap with the tyres cost him in a lot, and for McLaren not. They just put the right temperature in the car, and it was so difficult at one point to try to be faster than them. He cooked over the rear tyres before Piastri, you know, and they said it was a couple of mistakes that they did that at the end, even him blaming a little bit himself about not protecting that much. Oscar Piastri move, you know, he saw him in the mirrors, but he thought he's not going to risk it here. And, you know, it's about risk, Formula One. If you don't do it in that moment, maybe it was impossible. And Oscar mentioned the same. That was the move, because maybe he was not able to. In one point, Charles with clean air will have very good pace. And I think at the end, it was everything about the Oscar move, you know, the brave. I mean, Oscar is incredible. I mean,
he's a machine, isn't he?
It's a machine, and it's a future world champion for sure.
Yeah, I agree. But just on the topic of Checo, do you think this has this done him a lot of good within Red Bull?
Yeah, I mean, he found a car that gives him confidence in a racetrack like this. Now we're going to Singapore, where he won. They were not very good last year, but even Checo was a little bit better than Max in some point. And I think it's something that a good place that for Checo to regain that confidence, because this one kills you, you know? I know that it's all over tomorrow, but the costs are being so big with the points, for, as I mentioned, from the Constructor Championship. But I'm happy for Checo because he had a fantastic Friday, Saturday. He was happy with the car, more happy in the race trim also. and finish a race like that, you mentioned one lap before the end, is must be so frustrating. For Carlos, obviously, but more for Checo, that he was one of the contenders for the whole race. You know, he managed to overtake and be in third position from the beginning. You know, he qualified fourth, and then he was third in 2 seconds. And, well, frustrating.
Let's talk about the championship battle between Max Verstappen and Lando Norris now. Norris starts 15th after qualifying 17th, but got bumped up a couple of places because people starting at the back. He finishes P4. He takes fastest lap with Verstappen just behind in P5. So he's made up 3 points on Max to move 59 behind him. But as damage limitation goes, that's actually a great result.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he in the pen, he was not even happy because he was still thinking on yesterday, because he realized the pace he had for the race, and it, for him, he said maybe it was a win also. You know, he qualified on the top three. You know how he managed the tire, how he in some aspects, sometimes it's better than Oscar. Sometimes it's not that good on tires, depending on the racetrack. And Lando, with that pace, with that tires, he used for a million laps, you know, the hard tires, and with a very good pace, the frustration come bigger, because he mentioned it, like saying, okay, knowing that I finished fourth, but I qualify 15, if I qualify in the top, I will be able to fight for the win. And obviously, it's easy to say it now, but maybe it was a 1-2 for the team, and he can gain more advantage over Max Verstappen. That's why the frustration, instead of maybe 3 points, well, 15, you know, and the things will, you cannot give Max, because he's always going to finish, you know, cannot give Max that little window, no, to protect himself. Every opportunity you give Max to not lose that much points is good. Max was a little bit frustrated in the pen, but he said, okay, at least there are 3 points.
It was an extraordinary incident. We probably should talk about what happened in qualifying for Lando, in that, you know, the yellow flag came out for, I think it was Esteban Ocon, but only for him. It was only momentarily out. McLaren have been through all their footage, and it was there. There was some debate about whether there was a yellow flag or not. There was. It came up on Lando's dash. Mm. But as soon as it had come on, it came off.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think it was off. I think Lewis Hamilton was just behind him on the track, and it was off by the time Lewis got there. So it was just the perfect storm for him, and he must have been wondering, oh, my goodness, I can't.
And also because, well, they were always in the last minute of quali, you know, and that's Q1 with McLaren. Maybe they don't have to risk that much. I think they have a car to just go perfectly to Q2. And I think the team and him is going to learn that, because these things can happen. You know, the yellow flag can happen. If you don't have a very good lap on your dash to be, I don't know, clear for Q2 with a McLaren,
Get out there.
Yeah.
Don't wait. Get out there. Don't wait. Get the lap on the board.
How much is going to... The track evolution is going to change in Q1. You know, it's Q1. It's okay that the Williams or whatever other cars can risk more in Q1 to go to Q2. But with McLaren was a little bit tight. That's why maybe it's not only in his blame. I mean, the whole team for that instance. I don't know. I'm saying it. It's easy to say it from outside. But thinking of him being able to go to Q2 or Q3 with this performance, he did a great job. I mean, every single lap was with a medium tire was a record and record and record.
Now, look, one thing is clear, and that is that Lando Norris needs to make hay in Singapore, because I think the upgrades that... Red Bull have brought to the car recently, they're all geared towards the permanent tracks. Max Verstappen has said, we're only going to see the true benefit of them and when we get to Austin. So it looks like Singapore could be another weak track for them. The McLaren is quick everywhere. If Norris is really going to challenge for this world championship, he has to put more than 3 points on him in Singapore.
Yeah. That, I mean, he has to do the best of the best. Well, last year he was one of the contenders. No? He was going behind Carlos Sainz for the whole middle of the race. He was not able to win, but he was second with a McLaren. This is not the McLaren of this year. And I think, obviously, McLaren is fast in every single track. Oscar proved it in a track that I mean, it's the best track for Ferrari and Charles Leclerc, and it was frustrating him for Charles because he was not able to win. But, I mean, he have to, because we have a lot of race to go, and we have three sprint races. Well, you have, you know, 34 points instead of 26. If you do fastest lap, you win the, and if you start with 50 points or something like that, it's not a lot, no? And, I mean, Max has been lucky also this year, no? With Austria, he managed to finish, Lando not, and also in Hungary, you know? The car was jumping like Checo last year in Mexico, and the car was going on like nothing, and he finished fifth. And Lando looks like, because of his mistakes, and also maybe share it with the team, and not that the best of the luck, he should be more closer than Max than he is now.
I've always been the type to go all in. When I get into something, whether it's fitness, food, or just following every twist and turn of the season, I want to explore every angle. That's why Prime is such a game changer. It's not just fast delivery, though getting a new cookbook or resistance bands the next day definitely helps. It's also the deep dives on Prime Video, the playlists that match my mood on Amazon Music, and the way all of it comes together to keep me going. What I've learnt is this: Prime isn't just a service, it's a hub, a place where my interests, old and new, can live and grow. From race day rituals to everyday obsessions, Prime helps me get more out of whatever I'm into, and even shows me what's next. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into. Amazon.com/prime.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Franco Colapinto, welcome to the points in Formula One. Argentina's first point scorer since 1982.
Oh my God, amazing result for us. Oh my God.
It feels fantastic, to be honest. I am really happy, very proud of the team. What we achieved together, it was incredible, and I am, delighted for the job and the work that we have been doing. A lot of effort on these points. We already climbed one position in the Constructors' Championship in only my second race together, and we scored together a lot of points this weekend with Alex. So, as I said before, a dream come true. So, we need to keep going. It's a long season still, and we have many races left together. But it is a great start, and you know, very motivating for what is next. So, let's see.
I really want to talk about Williams. Alex Albon coming home in seventh. And can I call him your boy?
Yeah, Franco Colapinto. Oh, my God. Our boy. Obviously, I'm from Argentina, and my heart is part of it. And I know all the effort. I know him for a long time and how all his career was suffering. He arrived to Europe at 14 years old by himself, you know, for a father. Sometimes it's different in Europe because you can be at home at 2 hours flight. If you don't have that financial stability, you cannot go back for 14 hours flight and come back. And he was able to sleep and on the top of the karting team at 14 years old. And His career was like that always, fighting, going from one category to the other, trying to find a place. And if we think, like last year in Monza, he won a race, but he didn't know he would have the budget to go to Formula 2 or Formula 3 again. And now he's in Formula 1, 1 year time. I mean, it's a dream.
It's been an incredible journey. He scored points in his second race. The first Argentine driver to finish in the points in Formula 1 since Carlos Reutemann back in 1982.
42 years.
Yeah. Look, how has news of him becoming a Formula 1 driver been received back home?
It is
what
crazy.
What has it done to your TV numbers?
I mean, for ratings, for attention, for my job in the racetracks. Before it was very easy. Now we are live most of the day. Social media, but also one point, because he's very charismatic. He's a character.
In the press conference on Thursday, which I was hosting,
yeah,
he's a good talker.
Very good talker.
He was leaning back. I thought he was going to light a cigar and get a drink, and we were going to be there for a good couple of hours. I mean, he is a good talker, right?
Well, I saw the transcription of the press room that you were hosting the press conference. And all the rest of the transcription was a couple of paraphrases. And now with Franco was like pages and pages. And but he also gained that he has something in his character, that he's a very nice, exteriorized everything. And even with the reporters, the journalists, with the team itself, he goes and say hi to everybody. He's always kind to say a word to somebody, to sign. I mean, he's so natural. He's not playing a Formula One driver for now, no? He's the second race. But, I mean, he's like that.
He's had two cracking good races. Okay, there was the qualifying issue at Monza, but he's been very composed at both races, particularly here. Has he surprised you? Did you?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
What did you think he was going to achieve?
I mean, first of all, it's not an excuse, because every single driver, when they start a season, they go to racetrack, they don't know. But comparing, I don't like to compare, but Oli Berman last year won both races in Formula 2 here, you know, the sprint and the main race. Franco was his first time in this track. He did a lot of sim, but when he walked the track, he said, wow, turn 8 is much... it's not that wide, like you can see it in the simulator. That means that even if you do simulations, it's not the same that in proper reality. And he managed to make a mistake, and you know, looking for that limit in free practice one, he say sorry to the guys. He say great job to let me go out in the second practice. And from there on, he didn't put a foot wrong, a little bit maybe, but everybody did this weekend here, you know, even Charles Leclerc in the first practice, but and Oli Berman also. But up, starting from practice two, even he finished in front of Alex Albon, doesn't mean anything, but you never know what happened with Albon or not. In the second practice, he was only a tenth from Alex, and the third two. He qualified behind him, I mean, and he finished the race behind him. I mean, what better result for Williams to have a rookie driver in his second race scoring points behind Alex Albon?
Can I put this to you? If Carlos Sainz was still umming and ahhing about where he was going to drive next year, if he hadn't committed yet,
do you think
Valls might have made a different decision? Because Franco's done a brilliant job. He's got a lot of financial support now from Argentina.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you think James might have considered him for a race seat next year?
I think he was considered in one point. He was part of that list.
So even before he proved how good he is now.
I think he was part of that list. I don't know the order. Obviously, Carlos was the first option. I know that Williams wants to be the same team there was 20 years ago, and it's fantastic to have a team with a driver like Alex Albon and Carlos Sainz. But if these two races were a couple of months before Carlos was decided, because the one who was holding everybody was Carlos, I don't know if, you know, you have a charismatic driver, a fast driver, with also, as you mentioned, with sponsors that they are going with him since he was racing. I mean, the package is huge. And I think James Forbes and Williams have a problem.
Juan, it is so lovely. Your enthusiasm for Franco is infectious. I really like him in the dealings I've had with him. A little bit Senna-esque, I think, when you talk to him.
Yeah, even the look. You know,
even the look. The look. But equally, another guy today in only his second Grand Prix, Ollie Bearman, comes home in 10th. Ahead of Nico Hülkenberg, he out-qualifies Nico Hülkenberg. I mean, what a performance by him.
Well, yeah, I mean, when we saw him in a Ferrari in Saudi, he didn't have practice one and two, no? Replacing Carlos Sainz. And he managed to finish seventh with a Ferrari. I remember his neck, at the end of the laps, like almost...
bouncing around like a pinball, wasn't it?
But he was very decided to finish in that position. And when you give this very young, talented young driver the opportunity and they perform, it's fantastic, because Haas now is happy. You say, well, we'll make the right decision to have Ollie next year. And it's fantastic for him. I mean, he did a super job. Even in one party, they were fighting with Colapinto, their rivals in Formula 2, and now they were here. And I asked Lewis Hamilton about them, you know, more about Franco, because Lewis was behind and Franco was trying to not be overtook by a seven-time world champion. And he mentioned it's so nice to see the young drivers. And I asked him about Franco, but Lewis came out about Ollie also. And he say it's fantastic about having this young talented when they have the opportunity to perform well. And he see a lot of potential on them, you know. And I think it's fantastic for the sport. I like also, sorry, it's a personal opinion, I want to extend my opinion. I like this mix of young talent and driver. We have these old drivers coming together, like Charles, Max, and every from the same years competing against each other in Formula One. I also like having Fernando and Lewis, the mix, you know,
the
like
it's fantastic at the moment, isn't it? And you mentioned Lewis Hamilton. I think we can't finish the pod without mentioning Mercedes. Of course, George Russell comes home in third, and Lewis Hamilton, you know, was ninth after having to climb up from a pit lane start because of a power unit change. I'm baffled by Mercedes.
Yeah.
One day quick, next day slow. Even George Russell was saying after the race that on the medium tyre at the start of the race, he was nowhere. On the hard tyre at the end of the race, he was absolutely brilliant. And he said, I could have challenged... If I'd had that pace, the pace that I had in the second half of the race, I could have won the race. Yet they were nowhere on the medium.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what else he said? It was... one car and another different driver in the first part of the race and the second. And I say, are you sure it was the same driver? Because, yeah, they changed the drivers in the pit stop. Because that was the case. You know, it was, as you mentioned, the first stint was completely different of what the car did in the second. And it looks like Mercedes went back to that pace. They have this little, you know, window to put the perfect setup or the sweet spot. Because, I don't know, they have something to do with the tires, maybe, because George mentioned that on the radio, but also Lewis. But Lewis have the same issue with both set of tires. He was nowhere, and he say it was difficult to drive. He don't say a car, but well, this thing in one point. And I can see the frustration of Lewis, because after doing a great job in Belgium, okay, he won because of what happened with George, but it was 1-2 for Mercedes in Belgium, the win in Great Britain, Silverstone, and then come back again to a track and be nowhere and no understanding what's going on with the car, because George mentioned it, it's surprising, you know, in the same race with different tires, you can have one car and another, and I don't know what's going on, because it's difficult to understand.
Do you think this is maybe the toughest moment of Lewis Hamilton's career? Because I feel mentally... is he a Mercedes driver or is he a Ferrari driver? Of course, he's a Mercedes driver, I know that. But it's all about building up to next year now with Ferrari. He's clearly not getting on with this year's Mercedes. And of course, we're now into the final third of the year. I'm sure they're starting to shut him out of some of the meetings about next year's car. Yeah, this is his team. For long, for a decade, this was his team. And he's just, it's not flowing for him. He must be wanting the end of this season to come right now, just so he can turn the page and start again.
And I think that's the case, you know, because you have to think in that way. You have to have hope that your decision, you took to go to one of the greatest team of all, because for results, Ferrari is still the greatest team of all, and have the hope to go and be champion. Like Senna, at one point, he wanted to finish his career. He said it a couple of times in Ferrari. And at one point, everybody would say, oh, now that Mercedes is winning and Ferrari is nowhere, you want to change your mind? And then after that, they won in Monza, and Mercedes was nowhere in Monza. I mean, it's so up and down for each team in every single race. A part of McLaren, it looks like it performed perfect and everywhere. That Lewis, I think he will starting to think, because he already have the win, two wins, no? I mean, he mentioned it before Silverstone, that he have some, you know, mental health problem, thinking he will never win again, and he managed to win again in a tough season for him. He have to take that and start thinking the next year, even if he wants to win. But if the things don't go like he wants and he have a difficult car to drive, I will start thinking, okay, next year I'm going to have a good car, next year, you know? But I don't know. Well, obviously, he's a super professional driver, and he will do the best for Mercedes in the races to come. But at the end, he have the hope that Ferrari maybe have a great car next year and he can fight for the championship again.
So the top 10 looked like this. Oscar Piastri took the second win of his Formula One career, just ahead of Charles Leclerc in second and George Russell third. Lando Norris climbed a massive 11 places from 15th on the grid to 4th at the flag. Max Verstappen came home 5th, with Alonso taking his best result since Canada in 6th. Then came the two Williamses of Albon and Colapinto in 7th and 8th. Hamilton was 9th and Behrman rounded out the top 10. In the Drivers' Championship, Verstappen still leads, but Norris has reduced the deficit to 59 points. Leclerc is third, just 19 points behind Norris, with Baku winner Piastri 13 points further back. Sainz is fifth and Hamilton sixth. Perez and Russell are tied on 143 points, with the Aston Martins of Alonso and Stroll rounding out the top 10. In the Constructors' Championship, McLaren lead for the first time since 2014. They're 20 points ahead of Red Bull in second and 51 points ahead of Ferrari in third. Mercedes are a lonely fourth, 227 points ahead of Aston Martin in 5th, then come VCarb in 6th and Haas in 7th, Williams are up a place to 8th, 3 points ahead of Alpine in 9th, and Sauber are yet to score. Let's talk about the next race now, Juan. Singapore. It is another street track. It's arguably the toughest of the year physically for the drivers. The heat, the humidity, a little bit discombobulating with the time. It's an 8 p.m. start, of course. It's under the lights. Who do you think is going to win?
Well, last year, Carlos did a masterclass, you know, for the win, when he was given DRS. Two, and that time was Lando behind. They were asking Carlos, oh, you're giving DRS? Yes, on some purpose, you know, to try to get George in that time. And no, at the end, George made a mistake and Lewis was able to complete the podium. But what I'm saying is, if we have this fight today with McLaren and the reverse order, no, with Ferrari, I think we will have these two teams again. If we go by what we saw last year, Red Bull is impossible to perform well, because Max said he was jumping everywhere with the surface or whatever. But we know that Red Bull also can be very fast there, because Checo won, remember, in Singapore. And Mercedes is so difficult to predict. You know, maybe they're fast again there. I think we will have the four teams fighting again, but I see a little bit stronger McLaren for Singapore. I don't know. Tracks like this, street race, they're very good.
Oscar Orlando, go on.
I mean,
it's going to be so hard.
Oh, I don't want it, because I like them both, you know. Yeah. But I would like Lando to, for the championship itself, not because of Max or whatever, just to take more points off Max. And if both drivers are in good shape, and this time maybe McLaren, already Andrea Stella, that they will help the driver who's closer, and he have the opportunity to be 1-2. And Max is third, or whatever is Max, I think maybe we have, you mentioned it, Is it last chance maybe before Red Bull, maybe after Austin can start picking up? But I don't see that Red Bull is going to go up again like the beginning of the year, McLaren going to come down. They're going to be closer, but next race is the race for McLaren to try to make a bigger difference.
There is so much to look forward to. Well,
and Franco. Come on.
Well, you know, Franco, what was he? He was eighth here, sixth in Singapore.
Yeah, sixth in Singapore.
Actually, it'd be fascinating to learn about his preparations for Singapore when you've never raced there before.
Yeah. And, I mean, you mentioned it's his toughest race. Yeah. You lose like 4 or 5 kilos of fluids in that race. But he's been gradually put it, you know, like in the video games, they put difficulties in each stage you go. Yeah. You have Monza, now this one, and the next one is the toughest. And then he will have a little bit more knowledge about the car, about his body and everything. If he gets that difficulty, like it's Singapore, he goes over it? No? I think he's going to be fine for the rest of the year.
Brilliant. Well, Juan, final thing before you go, let's wind it back to today's race in Baku. Who was your driver of the day?
I mean, I agree completely with Oscar because of the move, of the win. But I put Oscar and second Franco. Really, yeah? It's not because... No, but you're going to say, oh, because your nationality...
He did drive brilliantly, I'll give you that.
But I mean, when they put the image of Oscar, then Charles and whatever... And even the TV put the 8th position of Franco before the 7th of Alex or whatever. They highlighted like a good race for him. And that means because I know what he did inside the team, how he changed a lot of things, how difficult it was for Logan not having Alex in the side. I don't want to compare both drivers because Logan was also a good, very good driver. But it's difficult for a driver past the mid-season, jump into a new car, with new racetracks, a part of Monza, and perform very, very close to your teammate, experienced driver like Alex, I will give him the driver of the day if it was not Piastri.
Okay, so you're actually saying Piastri.
Yeah.
And I
and
can't.
You?
Oh, I can't look beyond Oscar. I just thought lap after lap, that pressure all the way. I know they say pressure is a privilege, but...
Well,
he dealt with it perfectly.
Like he coped with it, and he came out of the car like nothing. I mean, he's so fresh.
I think he'll sleep well tonight.
Ah, yeah, he will sleep well.
All right. Well, guys, thank you very much to Nats and to Juan for joining us on the show. And for more reaction and analysis from Baku, go to F1.com, the official F1 app, F1 TV, or follow at F1 on X, Instagram, and TikTok. And tickets.formula1.com is the place to go to book your seat at a race this season. You could be in Austin, Las Vegas, Mexico. You could see the title being decided. All of the races are going to be gold. I can tell you that. Tickets.formula1.com. And don't forget the other official F1 podcasts, F1 Beyond the Grid for in-depth interviews, and F1 Explains for answers to your questions about the sport. Well, it's a street circuit doubleheader. F1 Nation will be back next week from the Marina Bay Circuit paddock for our review of the Singapore Grand Prix. But for now, thanks very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.
. 2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun. From the racetrack to your driveway, Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. They aren't affected by tariffs because their clothing products never left the U.S. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.